I don't know. I don't know if it's back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to be caught. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
Hello, what?
I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
There, I finally did it. Who's on first? Classic Abbott and Costello routine. You're listening to Bathrobes Pier, Robert Nurse. I'm your host on Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides. Broadsides against the ruling regents, the Rotkin Matthews Council. That's our Santa Cruz rulers. Belcher on the police force, Tracy on the sheriff's department. These are the people who essentially run the show in Santa Cruz. D.A. Art Danner, the whole gang of rascals. What about you? What have you got to say about any of this? Have you had any reactions to the show so far? Anything you want to contribute? If you have any questions or thoughts, give a call to 427-3772. 427-3772. I'm soon going to make like a bunny and hop up the hill to the candidates' forum, where the students are going to be hopefully giving a better grilling to the candidates than the Downtown Association did. Let's hear a little music, and then I will attempt to spin us into the next segment here. Let's see if we can do that. Let's do a little theme song music. There's a theme song I like, and you may find this familiar. I enjoy it.
Arabia, British steel mania, old Miss John Glenn, living deep Allison, Pope Paul, Malcolm X, British politician, sex, JFK, blown away, what else do I have to say?
Starting a fire today as far as the civil rights of those brutalized by the police goes. As you may know, today is October 22nd, the day of protest against police brutality and the criminalization of a generation. That happened this afternoon in San Francisco and across the country, actually. I heard it was being organized in San Diego and other places. Something that we need to pay attention to here in Santa Cruz, and I kind of had hoped that I would have some material ready to bring with me to the candidates forum tonight, asking about the kind of police misconduct that's been going on for the last year. We have the anniversary of the shooting of Happy John Dine on November 12th coming up. You may be aware that some students up there on campus are looking for cases of police brutality. Give a call to me at 423-HUFF if you have any problems that you want to report, if you have any reports that you want to pass on to these students who are trying to really get a local sense of just how bad things are here and an independent sense of what that's all about. What have we got? I'm short of material for the first time in a while. What I do have here is an interesting flyer, which I picked up at City Council for the day workers out at the San Lorenzo Lumber Yard. You may be aware of that. That's sort of along, I guess it's along River Street. River Street as it heads out toward the Gateway Project, the beautiful area that used to be historic property, and Riverside has been replaced by this monstrous series of outlets and San Jose-style malls. It's a mall, I should say. They widened the street and they essentially destroyed the entire character of the area. I think ruined a few businesses and bulldozed homes while they did. The Rotkin Matthews solution to bringing in tax revenues, and I don't even know if they're successful at that. Anyway, near there is the San Lorenzo Lumber Yard, where you often see mostly Hispanic day laborers looking for work by standing on the sidewalk and kind of offering themselves up for manual labor or whatever. Well, apparently there's a city council plan in motion to get these unsightly folks out of sight. That's the latest plan of some of the folks down at City Hall. They're going to talk about kind of changing the street, and they're planning to widen River Street. They see this as a commercial corridor, and I guess the Mexicanos would be a little bit out of place, you know, in the downtown area, if we're really trying to have a commercial corridor where you can shop your way to the boardwalk. I mean, you're going to have to pass these people, maybe offer them work, or see that there are people who, you know, can't be spending so much money all the time. It would, you know, break the mood of the shoppers. So the plan here is that they've got some flyers they've already put out, and they've got some rules for the day workers, and then another flyer for the contractors, homeowners, and handymen. Now, the rules for the day workers are, you know, do not obstruct entrances to any business or establishment, do not trespass onto private property, do not block the sidewalks or destroy plants, do not harass persons, especially women, going into businesses or walking along the sidewalk, do not drink alcohol or use drugs, do not urinate in public, do not litter, do not conduct job negotiations with vehicles parked on private property, like the parking lot of San Lorenzo Lumber, or stopped in the middle of the street. The police will enforce all laws 24 hours a day. If you violate the law, you will be cited and arrested. And they direct people to go to Labor Ready, a site on Soquel Drive, Laborers Union, a site on Eaton Street, and the Employment Development Department in Capitola. So that, again, the homeless aren't the only people being told to get out of town, in so many words. They're actually telling the day workers to hit the road. They actually don't tell them to leave those spots. They are, you know, kind of sort of setting up the harassment mechanism. What's interesting is the flyer to the homeowners, contractors, and handymen says, if you need workers, please do not pick them up at this location. Day worker transactions are causing serious safety problems for drivers, cyclists, and other pedestrians along North River Street. I haven't heard of any. Maybe I've been missing that. Local businesses and residents are being affected negatively by congestion and behavior problems associated with day labor activity. This is the same mysterious behavior problems that gave us the downtown ordinances, so that, you know, folks who ask for money, they have an opportunity to arrest these people and drive them out of the downtown. Police will enforce all applicable state and local laws if you trespass, block sidewalks or entrances, or engage in inappropriate behavior. And then, of course, they don't tell you all the specifics, because they don't have to tell you don't urinate, because the homeowners, contractors, and handymen already have places to urinate, you see. They're just telling the homeless, you know, don't urinate, telling these day laborers don't urinate, because, of course, there ain't no place for them to urinate. Actually, I'm not entirely sure. They may have they opened up a porta potty down there? That would have been so nice if they had. I remember a speech I gave to City Council this summer talking about the stench in Santa Cruz. And I wasn't referring to the stench of urine on the streets, although that's part of it. I was talking about the stench of hypocrisy and sanctimonious bullshit from the city council, which can't find the money to open up a 24-hour restroom, even though Capitola, for example, has porta-potties 24 hours a day on the beach, and it's one-fifth the size of Santa Cruz. Other cities, one-half the size of Santa Cruz, have found ways to open up restrooms or 24-hour restroom facilities of one sort or another. But instead, Santa Cruz wants to spend its money on Charlie Canfield and bigger police departments. It's really quite something to have to chew and swallow, and that's something we all have to do every day. But hopefully, with this wonderful new set of progressive candidates coming in, I don't want to say be too sarcastic, but there may be chance for change with Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar. So I would encourage you to vote for these guys. even though they are pale males, I bet they're blacker or darker or more concerned than anybody that's currently on the council, possibly with the exception of Byers and Scott, who's retiring, Scott that is. And, whether they're Uncle Toms or not remains to be seen. I guess they can't really call them Uncle Tom because they all have white skin color, unlike our friend Hernandez, who's shown long since that his Latino skin color doesn't have too much to do with his thinking or his commitments. Certainly has something to do with his language, his rhetoric, and his special pleading, but not much to do with where his heart lies, I don't think, based on his willingness to bulldoze the beach flats and to eliminate housing for hundreds of people. You know, simply, I don't even know if he's aware of these issues to play, to please his friend Kennedy and Rotkin is, the way I look at it at the moment. Mike Hernandez, feel free to call in and let me know that you disagree with me or possibly I'm misstating your position. You've always been invited to be on the air and you've never chosen to avail yourself of that opportunity. Again, like your mentor, Scott Kennedy, who has on three occasions broken his commitment to be on the air with Free Radio, his agreement to do that. Apparently, Free Radio is a little too free for Scott Kennedy. This is Free Radio at 96.3, and you have the opportunity to call in at 427-3772. Do so, and let's hear a little music while you put your finger in that dial.
Sleeping on the city street, lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me. Survives an awful fight. I spend my time collecting cans while you're out working on your tans on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. The poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me. You and me. Now 30,000 children died while some politician lied. They bust the starving kid who steals while the fat cats make their sweetheart deals on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me.
Robin Screech here with another thrilling episode of Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Today's journey takes us to the streets of your city, where we'll visit the homeless in their native habitats. Street corners of makeshift cardboard shelters, sewer grate and doorway bedrooms, soup line kitchens lit by blazing oil barrel fireplaces, alleyways of the addicted, the unemployed, the destitute, the insane, eating and sleeping in the most unlikely places. It's all here on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
Now, in the ghetto, there's always of the ethnic population boom. The melting pot boils past the brim while the people's future's looking grim on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me. You and me. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon.
And that was Mark Levy, Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Familiar to many of us poor nameless ones. I am now going to do something that I will probably regret, but I have got to go, and the only tape that I can find here is an interview I had the other day, a very controversial interview, with homeless activist Jane Immler. And this is a long interview that I'm afraid will have to be cut off before the interview is completed. We only have half an hour's left showtime, and Uncle Dennis is justly jealous of his time. He comes on at 8 o'clock and goes to 10, has lots of stuff, densely packed environmental rights updates that we need to hear about. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this interview with Calamity Jane Immler. She is an activist who came to Santa Cruz and really revolutionized the situation, started many, many different homeless services. Essentially, not by pandering to the merchants or by begging the city council or by voting for the right candidate. No, she got her ass out at the town clock and started hunger strikes. She organized homeless people in rallies and marches and protests. She took over kitchens when the county broke its word and refused to provide the kitchens that they had promised for her her meal at Calamity's Cupboard when it began in 1989. We're going to hear about all that. We're talking mainly about an article, again, that appeared in the Mid-County Post, to bring us back to what I began to talk about at the beginning of the show, a laudatory hagiography, is the proper word, a kind of a, like the lives of the saints, of Karen Gillette. And really no one knows Karen Gillette better than Jane Immler, who worked with her very closely for a year and then saw Gillette come in and steal the program that she had set up. It's important that we understand this history if we're to understand the current political situation with Karen Gillette's endorsing candidates who would seem to be the very opposite of those that you would think that a homeless rights advocate or a homeless services provider would endorse. Let's hear this bit of an interview. Actually, it's going to be half an hour's worth of my talking to Jane Immler on the phone, and I think we'll conclude this interview next Sunday when the show resumes, and you'll probably go directly into Uncle Dennis's show since I won't be here to say goodbye to you. I'll say goodbye now. Stay with Free Radio, listen to Jane Immler, and if you have any thoughts on this or any comments, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, and then please join me up at the Candidates Forum at Kresge College at 8 o'clock at UCSC. And then I'll be talking to you on Sunday at 11 o'clock with the next edition of Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides.
I'm talking to Jane Immler, who is an activist whose hunger strikes in the mid-80s created the Cedar Street Cold and Rainy Night Shelter and pressed successfully for the city to purchase the River Street Mini Shelter property, and who set up the first free meal program. Actually, a number of us were involved in that. I was working with you, Jane, back then. They called SWAP, Soup Without a Permit. I guess it was Bag Ladies Revolt was the first.
Yeah, right.
Hot soup program. And then you were actually funded by the city after many arrests and such in Calamity's Cupboard until, I guess, Karen Gillette began her program, The Free Meal, after you had successfully demanded the city provide access to a certified kitchen in the spring of 1990. But in order to do that, what they did was they dumped you and they put Gillette in place. So you heard this article in the Mid-County Post, which is now on the
the free weekly or bi-weekly paper we have here in Santa Cruz, October 13th through 26th issue. It has an article about Karen Gillette, who's the executive director of the Homeless Community Resource Center, and the front page says, "The Advocate, Karen Gillette took the cause of homelessness and turned it into a movement." And I've read you this article. You currently, of course, are living halfway across the country in Missouri. But I wanted to get your reactions to it, since you were deeply involved with homeless struggles in the 80s and the early 90s, and you are familiar with a lot of the players. In fact, I guess Karen Gillette joined your operation originally, right?
Yes, that's correct. And I just have a few things to say about the article. I would agree with Karen Gillette that she's no Mother Teresa. And I would, it appears to me that Karen Gillette is the quintessential yuppie politician, political. She lies like a rug, or either that or she's got Alzheimer's, making comments like seeing people stealing soup from each other. The people that were stealing the soup were the authorities stealing it from the homeless and the poor people. It wasn't the people stealing it from each other. And there are a number of other things in there that are indicating that she lies like a rug, or has Alzheimer's. And the other thing I would like to say that she also, while doing all this, she's lining her pockets with federal dollars and donations, which is something that I and you and all the other people who were working with us initially never did. We started the process by having the merchants working with us. They were the ones who were donating the food, the money for the food. We used to glean Seagate salad bars on Fridays. That's where the food came from on Fridays. There were a number of restaurants there in town. I'm not even sure if they're there anymore. That were giving us big kettles of soup. She didn't start that either. The merchants were working with us from the very beginning, which had a lot to do with started out because I opposed that one amendment that was going to make some sort of a weird tax be put on the restaurants that was supposed to go money to go down to the homeless projects, which was just another one of those boondoggles that the money wasn't ever going to get there.
Now, let me interrupt you for a minute, Jane, because I want to hear more, but we should add that you were a city council candidate in 1988 and you also ran for sheriff in 1987, correct?
I think I ran for sheriff in 86. Right. Yeah.
So you actually raised a lot of these issues in public forums, and you were involved in a kind of a strong movement to end the sleeping ban, which brought lots of homeless people to city council in 1988.
Exactly, right. We did it. In fact, I you'd have to look up the records, but there was more than a dozen of us, I believe, running in 1988 for those city council seats.
22.
And I was successful in, and actually other homeless advocates were successful in, turning the entire campaign into raising issues about homeless people and about homeless rights and campgrounds and feeding programs. And I believe that, you know, we did, that was a very significant point. I mean, the homeless people themselves were coming to those meetings. I know in one particular one at the Holiday Inn, put on by the Merchants Association, had wonderful food which the homeless came and partook of. So it was, the whole nonsense of her, you know, this is just revisionist history as far as I'm concerned.
Now, how did you first meet Karen Gillette? And I guess you were working with her originally? Tell us about that.
It seems to me, you know, I'm a little vague. You may remember this more than I am. It seems like it was this after we shut down the...
Well, I know Karen Gillette, the first I remember of Karen Gillette is a letter she wrote in the paper in the spring of 1989, which was a period of time when when the authorities were not only arresting people for serving food at the town clock, even though there were no real health problems, it was simply a pretext to get rid of the operation there.
Now that you've refreshed my memory, I think she started, she came to somebody, it might have been you or somebody else, you might have charmed her, and said, "Can I fix some sandwiches?" And it seems that it may have been that point of where we were between when the city did that one month Christmas gift to the homeless to get us away from the town clock, and then we started up again, and they came in with the SWAT people, the SWAT team, to shut us down.
Right, it was in early January.
Yeah, it may have been somewhere in that period of time, but I know we at that point we were still, you know, it may have even been later than that when they got the injunctions out against us, and there was some concern about whether or not we were, you know, going to be able to even provide the soup. And at some point, I think she offered to make sandwiches, something like that.
I don't remember. I don't remember the letter she wrote to the paper supporting the folks at the town clock.
But I do know that at the point when we went into the agreement with the city and the county, that we would open.
You're talking about a year later. What happened was, let me fill in the chronology for folks. They were in 1988, in order to protest violence against the homeless and the sleeping ban. You and others, in a group called Bag Ladies Revolt, including Shannon Cosamo and Linda Lemaster and Linda Edwards, myself actually, we did a little kind of a protest at the tail end of the mayor's Thanksgiving parade when Marty Wormhout was mayor. And you announced with flyers in that parade that you would begin a soup giveaway at the town clock, a hot soup to protest violence against the homeless. Both taking the form of police violence under the camping ban and troll busting that was going on at that time. And I guess you've done similar kinds of hot soup giveaways when you were protesting the county's camping ban back in the mid-80s, and when you were protesting doing a hunger strike yourself, as you did in 1985, to set up cold and rainy night shelter and look for a campground, and in 1986 to unblock the blockage that had happened with the River Street shelter property transfer, which later became the River Street mini shelter, as I call it.
Right, and then we had been doing periodic soup things at city council prior to started Thanksgiving too.
Right, and we'd also been having weekly or bi-weekly demonstrations at city council. Were quite large, involving often from 10 to 30 people, many of them, most of them homeless actually, and the city council was getting upset at this, and they actually called in health inspectors in early December against us. One woman, no guns, was dragged off in a chokehold. Her son was grabbed. I guess you were also arrested and ticketed. And then you announced the formation of this protest against violence at the town clock, which through negotiations was sort of forestalled by the establishment of a month's worth of meals out at River Street. There was no homeless community center down out there. There was no free meal. There was only a sort of this building, the mini shelter, as we called it. We called it the mini shelter then because only two of the 14 beds that were then in use were designated for homeless use.
Well, now, and I believe, and you could correct me, Robert, but I think at this time, didn't Tom Noddy also get involved in some negotiations?
Tom Noddy was involved in negotiating this.
Yeah, well, before we even served the first cup of soup, the day of that Thanksgiving weekend at the town clock, that Saturday, we got a phone call. I was at Linda Lemaster's at the time, telling me from the park administrator, who was the head of the park guy? Somebody. Anyway, he telling us that it was illegal to do that. And, you know, and I questioned it that at the time that, why is it suddenly illegal? Because we've been doing it off and on all these months and nobody's ever said that. So we were put on notice immediately that it was going to be illegal.
Right. Now, actually, I mean, this is an interesting history, but I tend to get sidetracked. We were talking about Karen Gillette. We really entered the pictures, I remember, only months later after the city began arresting us, got an injunction against us.
Exactly.
I guess she was very concerned about being behind the scenes, about not being public. And then I guess she felt that by writing a letter to the Sentinel, and she did write a supportive letter to the Sentinel, she did go public, and she supported the people serving soup at the town clock and opposed the violence against them. And I must say, seizing people's food is a form of violence. That has to be, and I don't see any other way out of it. It may not be direct physical violence against their persons, but it attacks their health, it attacks their property, it puts them in fear. I mean, it's a form of violence. And the next thing, of course, I remember was that you and we attempted to get the city to set up a food program, but Mayor Marty Wormhout and John Laird and all the other good liberals who are now the heroes of the community and big politicians at either the Super Missouri level or elsewhere I guess Laird isn't a politician, he's a county employee and a big union person, refused to set up a food program until, I guess, Sandy Loringer was convicted of serving free food and served 3 weeks in jail or some such thing. She was the first such person to serve time, that length of time in jail for serving food. Brian Flanagan Staley, your old pal, was also convicted, and many of us were set for trial. And I guess the county then kind of, and the city finally decided to have enough of the incredible publicity, which had gone as far as Bombay papers, where people in India were talking about the mayor of Santa Cruz arresting people for serving the homeless free food. And the mayor came to you with a plan, and you began a program called Calamity's Cupboard, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. But we turned down the first plan because, and that's where I was headed before, and I guess I got off track, was back when they first gave them that 1 month of free food behind the River Street Shelter. They had asked me to take that program back there, if you remember correctly, my program. And then I said no, because I thought they were asking us to hide the homeless in the bushes, and so we refused. And then when it came up, you know, a year later, and they wanted us to go back, they wanted to sponsor a program back there, but they wanted security guards, they wanted fences, they wanted all that kind of nonsense, and so we said no. And so then I think we were going to city council, I turned to you and I said, we need a flyer. You produced one, and because she got blamed for it, but I was the one who asked you to make that flyer. Anyway, in which they were very put out at us. So they said, well, if you're not any more grateful than that, we won't do this program.
The flyer referred to the city council as the soup snatching gang of seven.
Exactly.
Yeah, they didn't go for that phrase, but
right, and then some more of us went to trial, and then I think in the meantime, then, you know, then Sandy got convicted or whatever, and then I said, okay, you get me a better deal, and we'll go do it. But part of that deal was to set up, to find us a permanent kitchen.
And you actually then began serving food, and to continue to serve not just homeless people, but in the wake of the earthquake, you served hundreds of people out of the city.
Went in and took over the shelter. We took over the shelter the food part of it for the Red Cross, and that's what subsequently got the food trailer, which went on to Gillette's operation. But it was the work we did during the earthquake for 2 weeks, first at the Civic, and then when they closed that down because of structural damage, they moved us to Portuguese Hall.
Now Karen Gillette was working for you in this period when you were funded, I guess, in August or September of 1989.
Right, and she at that point she did come in and start helping on a regular basis.
And how was she as a worker?
Huh?
How was she as a worker?
I thought she was very good as a worker. I have no problems with her as a worker. You know, outside of there was some, you know, I don't want to come across as some anti-drug person, because obviously my son helped write the initiative for the medical marijuana thing.
Your son is Scott Emler, who's pretty high up in local L.A. Medical marijuana circles.
And I'm certainly not that way, but there was drug usage going on that was of concern. It was, and her drugs were being kept in a trailer that we were renting, and you know, this was always some concern for me, just because of the laws, the way they are.
Now, by drugs, what are you talking about?
Well, as far as I know, at the trailer, there was just a significant amount of marijuana, which I think she was like, I mean, I don't know, maybe I should be more knowledgeable than this, but I just know, you know, I mean, I think she, other people, she was like a dealer, and then it went off in small packages to other people that went to sell it or something. I can't, you know, I mean, I just know what I saw was the larger bag of which she was concerned about being in the trailer. And now she was a deadhead, and so she did do I think she did some acid, but now that, you know, I that's only what she told me.
Did
I never
did,
saw
did
any evidence.
Did it interfere with her work, or was she doing a good job?
Oh, I thought as far as her work with me, I thought she was a very good worker. I have no problems with.
Now, you two did fairly well, and then I guess in February of 1990, after many attempts to get the county to come through or the city to come through with a certified kitchen, which you found you needed and didn't have, ironically, in the past they'd attacked you and arrested you for not complying with the health code, which required a certified kitchen. This time you were demanding they release a certified kitchen, and they wouldn't do it. So,
well, and this was after they finally, you know, we weren't allowed to use the River Street Shelter Kitchen, which is one of the places I wanted to use, and in some ways, I was one of those that helped establish that. I thought I had a right to it.
It was very near the site you were serving on, right? Which is right actually near where the
it
current.
It's there. And so what we were the day center. What was that place called? Where Bob Campbell operated was for the mental.
That was called Pioneer House.
So we were sent over there, which was okay, except that, you know, we're dealing with people that are a little bit unbalanced. And on a number of occasions, at least three, I caught, you know, various male people there spitting in the pots of soup. Well, now, you know, I'm the one who's responsible for that, for the integrity of this food. And so, I mean, I turn up the fire and boil it a little more, but then, you know, then at that point, since this county was not coming through, and this was supposedly Andy Schifrin, who was supposed to be handling all this, with the kitchen, I said, okay, and I talked to my fellow activists, and I said, you know, I'm going to shut this program down, and we'll just take it, well, we all talked about it, and it was agreed that we take it back to the streets until the county found us a suitable kitchen.
And indeed you did, and you actually served food and were arrested in three or four places. I was arrested with you. You were arrested at the so-called food court, which was this large temporary tent that the city set up. They could always afford tents for the merchants, but apparently never for the homeless. Interesting, but sad fact. You were arrested there for trespass.
I wasn't arrested at the food court. Other people were arrested.
You're right. It was Leith Austin, I guess.
I was arrested at
the Viner, who were arrested.
That's one of the ironic places, because that's the place we were cooking for when people got homeless from the earthquake and for everybody else.
You're thinking of the Civic Auditorium.
Right. Yeah. We went in there. We got arrested there.
We got arrested at the Civic Auditorium. We got arrested. What we were doing was we were dramatizing the failure of the county to provide its promised kitchen by going to unused county kitchens or other kitchens and using them to cook food for the homeless. It's
exactly.
Sort of a publicity device.
The final place was when we got arrested when we shut down the Board of Supervisors meeting. Because we went in there to address our concerns about the kitchen and that they had never followed through on their promises.
Right, and of course then there was cooking that took place out on the streets at the 8.5 month post office homeless table vigil where the
And throughout that, the whole time it was shut down, we continued to provide, several people were making sandwiches and doing various things, so there was always food out on the streets in the evening. Although weren't serving behind the shelter like we were, and but there was good quality food out there. So it wasn't like we had taken these people's food away, but we just felt like that we needed a kitchen that was more, it was certified. That's what they told us we had.
So now Karen Gillette was working with you throughout all this time, right?
Yes, up until we shut it down, and she went on with us for about 3 weeks.
And then what happened?
Well, then, is my understanding, they said that they were going to show us some kitchens. And so, since she was a county employee, we were just kind of leaving that task to her to talk with the people over there, and they were going to show her kitchens. And then they told us about one kitchen, and I think we looked at it, and I'm not even sure now where it was, and it wasn't suitable.
Talking about Rama Kalsa's kitchen.
Yeah, right, yeah, right. And so then...
This was a kitchen at the Emmeline Center, very far away from the downtown, and it was, I guess he thought it was both too small and too distant or something.
And then they took Karen, then apparently at some point she made it known that she was willing to go on and break with us, and that she would do this on her own. It may be she was sent in there originally to make this happen. I don't know. I mean, I have no knowledge of what that was all about. But she cut a deal behind my back to take over a kitchen. They showed her some kitchen that I had never been shown, and which was a very good kitchen. And that's ultimately the one that caught on fire, isn't it? that burned?
I think so.
Yeah. And so then she, at that point is when, you know, we obviously broke rank, because I mean she just said, well, the people are unhappy, they're not being fed, so I'm gonna take the program and go.
But what was wrong with her doing that? What's your assessment of that action by her?
Well, I think, you know, the struggle of the homeless movement itself, to organize and to work with homeless people is difficult just because of the fact they don't have phones. I mean, they're not that interested in the process, the political, I mean, because they don't, when you don't even have your basic needs being met daily, food, shelter, etc., you don't have a whole lot of energy and time to put into, to political stuff. But I think that because we had been working with them for quite a while, and, I mean, they were actually working with us. We were, they helped a great deal, helped me with the feeding program behind the River Street Shelter. And essentially when she moved in like that, it caused a very significant split, I think, in the whole homeless movement. I don't think it has ever recovered there in Santa Cruz. It just kind of opened a gap that allowed a lot of different factions to enter in. And
after that period, that happened, of course, in April of 1989.
Right.
She set up her own meal called Free Meal.
Right.
Which essentially was your meal, and she visited exactly the same place.
Exactly.
I guess a trailer.
Well, that was the trailer that was given to us, or was given to her, ultimately to the Free Meal, but it was based on the work that there was some money left over in the Red Cross Fund, and it was basically for the work that we did for the earthquake people for Red Cross. And I had requested that when we were having discussions with Andy Schifrin and Don Lane and all those people about when they were saying, well, what do you want in the kitchen? And I said, well, what I'd really like to have is a cook trailer. You know, that would be the ultimate, because that way we could, you know, move it here, move it there. And so, and then when they were talking about the Red Cross money, I said, well, why don't you get the Red Cross to give us, since we did the work, why don't you have them get us a cook trailer? I mean, and so, I mean, I'm going to take credit for planting the seed that eventually bloomed, you know. I mean, that's where that trailer came from. Is it still there?
Yeah, it's still there. It's still there, and I guess people are still cooking out of it. That's now on the Homeless Community Resource Center property, although, of course, the site of the meal has moved from where it was originally, which is kind of midway between the River Street Shelter and the Homeless Community Resource Center on Citizens Committee for the Homeless property, and now that property has community house trailers, and it's into the bays of the Homeless Community Resource Center. I love going through all this old history, but I suspect people are living, you know...
Most likely, right.
We could talk about how, in the summer of 1990, liberals split the homeless movement further under the leadership of Sherry Connable and Margaret Marr and Paul Brindell, who the latter has since returned to the fold, as far as I'm concerned. The other two have not. We could go on about how a large homeless movement was essentially split, divided, and co-opted, and that has, to some extent, been the condition for the last decade in Santa Cruz, with some exceptions. But I'm trying to focus on Karen Gillette here, and this article in the Mid-County Post. She is now, of course, a very powerful city-county employee for this Homeless Community Resource Center. I want to hear some more of your sense of, well, I mean, you heard the article and you clarified, you said that Karen lies like a rug. Now, what do you mean by that? I mean, let's be very specific.
I have to go back and go point by point, but I think it overall, when I say that she lies like a rug, it's because she has just totally wiped off. I mean, she's taken credit for everything that's happened by folks that maybe you and I don't care for anyway, but still have played a role, like the Paulies and whatever. But she takes credit that everything was her doing.
I'm sorry, go ahead. You were saying about...
Well, I just think that a true hero or a true heroine doesn't feel the necessity to trash all the work that the people ahead of her did, and then take credit for everything. that's just not, you know, that immediately sends up a red flag of someone. They do that.
Sharon and I have our personal clashes, but I have to agree with you on that substantive point. But what other lies? And you claim she doesn't give credit to you, to other activists who set up the programs that she's now administering. What else do you feel are misstatements you've heard in the article or, you know, other...
Well, we talked about that, like her perception that it was the homeless stealing the soup from each other, which we know that wasn't true. You know, but I mean, she says things to make it to be politically correct or to get into the good graces of the folks that are, you know, pulling her strings or putting money in her pocket.
Well, it is true that her Homeless Community Resource Center board, it had closed meetings ever since it was initiated until they wanted to merge with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and then one of the requirements was that they open their meetings, and much of her board had merchants on it, downtown merchants, for example, and of course she, of all the progressives, one of the few people, other than the Kennedy-Rotkin renegades, as we now call them in Santa Cruz, who endorsed candidate Linda Steinau. And Linda Steinau was the head of the Downtown Association, and there seems to be a very close connection between Karen Gillette and the downtown merchants. So, for example, she supported the Real Change, Not Spare Change, give a little piece of paper to a panhandler rather than a quarter, that in essence says, go clean up and get a job and stop bothering me. What it actually says is, here is a list of resources, and of course the resources aren't real resources because you have to make a phone call to get them.
Well, that's the same game they were playing back in 1985 when we did the hunger strike. They tell you, when we said, you know, we need shelters, they said, oh, there's shelters. Call this number. Well, you call that number. First of all, you did back then it was a dime, and if you didn't have a dime, you're out of luck. But if you call that number, you'd get a recording.
Of course, that's the same thing now.
Yeah, it was nothing. It was a charade, is what it was.
It's true that the Homeless Community Resource Center does provide lockers, a usable phone, although you have to stand in line frequently, showers, maybe you can get a shower twice a week or something, and a meal at 4, and I guess a sort of a mini meal in the morning. Wouldn't you call this an improvement over the situation a decade ago?